It's 57 minutes after 4 o'clock. And you are listening to 104.3, 104.7 KHUM, Cutting Eureka Arcata, with stream and podcast on at khum.com. And joining me now in the studio, I'm very happy to welcome Mr. Arnie Klein, who's a candidate for DA. Welcome. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for allowing my voice to be heard.
It is my pleasure, and arguably my obligation, I think. Anyway, thanks for coming down and making some time. I wanted to let's mention the event. We'll mention it a couple times, but one of the reasons why you're here is to get the word out about an event that you have coming up tonight. And what is that event?
Oh, that event is at the Barfly. It's from 7:30 to 8:30. It's a meet and greet, and anybody who wants to get a sense of me in a personal way can walk up and shake my hand and ask me any questions they want, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Okay. All right. So we'll mention this again, but that is, again, tonight at the Barfly, and it starts at 7:30. I guess my first question to you is, why do you want to be a DA, the DA?
Well, there's a reason. I've spent 40 years in law enforcement until I retired about a year and a half ago. 20 years on the defense side, 20 years on the prosecution side. I came to Humboldt County. I've been here for 6 years. I was a prosecutor here for 6 years. I've come to love the land, love the people, love the whole environment. Reason I'm running is because I've seen what's happened to the DA's office in the last 6 years. It's gone from 18 DAs to 8 DAs. The most experienced person there now has 5 years, 4.5 actually, and she's running for DA. I've seen the total broken down mess that it is. What you have now is a three-legged racehorse, and what I'd like to do is restore some respectability to the prosecution office of Humboldt County.
Okay, well, let me then follow up that with the what do you think has led to the situation that you just described, and what would you do to right that ship?
Sure, it's an easy answer. Paul Gagos got elected about 12 years ago. He's a good man with a big heart. I think he got wrong advice. He had no prosecutorial training. They just elected somebody off the street because he has charisma, and in certain circles, you'd say he has it. Whatever it is. But then when he got into the office, he hadn't the slightest idea where to start to be a prosecutor. I have 20 years experience in 4 counties. I've done a lot of murder cases, rape cases, robbery cases, kidnap cases. I was the first sexual assault prosecutor in the county of L.A. I've had special training. I gave rape trauma lectures to first-year med students and formulated outreach programs. And what I'd like to do is bring that all in the Humboldt County and use my vast experience so that the people of Humboldt County can be proud of what they have instead of reading in the paper every day a new horror story.
Okay. All right. And you mentioned that you sort of began your legal career, at least your prosecutorial career, in L.A. as a deputy district attorney. You were down there for 9 years.
Yes, it's quite different from Humboldt, I can assure you.
I'm sure. But
right.
And then you spent 20 years of your career as a defense attorney.
In Century City. I had some high-profile cases, like they were making Twilight Zone the movie when the helicopter came down and killed Vic Morrow and 2 children. I was the defense attorney in that case. It lasted over a year in trial. And one of my ex-wives is living in the proceeds of that case now. We prevailed, and justice prevailed, but the money wandered. That's all I can tell you.
It was the special effects guy who you were defending.
The head special effects person, that's correct, okay. Which was the linchpin to the whole case.
What made you switch from being on the prosecution side to the defense side?
Oh, I met a public defender who introduced me to the defense side. I had been a prosecutor, and as a new prosecutor, you think that you are the answer to all the people's problems that you have got on your side, and that cops don't lie. It turns out not especially all that is true. So I got to meet another side of it, and I wanted to explore new avenues, new options, and that's what I did for 20 years and really enjoyed it because, you know, when I was in second grade, my teacher said there are people who work on conveyor belts. Some people get so bored, they'll throw wrenches in to see it break down. I'm that kind of guy. I like to see things break down, you know? But I know how to prevent it, and that's why I'll make a great prosecutor and a great DA.
And you went back on the other side after your 20 years on the defense for in Tulare County and up here. And,
well, you've done your homework. Right.
Well, you know, I like to pretend. I like to come across as someone who's prepared.
No, you pretend well. You can use that word. It's okay. I was in Tulare County. I did mostly gang murder cases, and I was a major narcotics prosecutor. We went basically after white dope, meth, amphetamines, and heroin. And so between gang murder cases, one week the Sorteños would love me, and the next week the Norteños would love me, but eventually they both wanted me dead. So I moved on after about 5 years to Monterey County, which is really pretty, but it really is for the rich people, you know? But I had a great year and a half in Monterey, and then meandered up here to Humboldt.
What brought you up here? Why did you end up in Humboldt?
Well, it's going to be my elephant burial ground. I've been here once before. The air is clean. We're right near the water. Everything is pristine, and the people are nice, and you couldn't ask for a better place to live.
Okay. Well, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. You have put on your – well, there's – actually, let me ask some other questions, and we'll get this. You put on your website sort of five main things that you that sort of define your philosophy, and I want to talk about that in a bit.
Sure.
But before I want to talk a little bit about the existing situation in the DA's office and find out what you think about that. You were a deputy district attorney in Gallegos' office until very recently.
The only wise decision he ever made, he hired me.
And from my sort of somewhat to very uninformed perspective, there's been some of the problems that have sort of plagued the district attorney's office have been cultural in nature. There's been at least it seems to me friction between the police and the DA's office, at least an earlier incarnation of the police, and there's been opposition to Gallegos that to me stems from a sort of a cultural perspective rather than strictly evaluating him on the basis of his skills as a district attorney. I'm wondering if you agree with any of that, and if so, how would you conduct yourself to change these things?
Well, I have a different point of view when it comes to the way you describe Paul. For one thing is, there is a total breakdown in communication between law enforcement and Paul. And a lot of that is cultural and how people how they perceive the police in our county. And some of it has merit and some of it doesn't. Here's the difference between Paul and I. My door would be open. If you were a citizen, you could walk off the street and you could talk to me. If you were a peace officer, you could walk into my office and I'd talk to you. But you know the thing about my campaign? It's a grassroots campaign. I don't have the cops behind me. I don't have the big money behind me. All I have is people who care about justice behind me. And they believe that I have the experience, and that's why I go under the handle of Because Experience Matters. So what would I do different than Paul? First, I'd listen. And then I would evaluate the priorities. You got to understand, with only eight DAs and then going from five criminal courts to four, each DA's caseload increased by 20%. They have no mentoring. I want to be the tip of the sword prosecutorial office so that all of California can look to us to see how it's done. And the way to do that is I have three or four very experienced DAs ready to move in and take on this challenge. And it will be a challenge. Because let me briefly state one thing. I'm working out at the gym where I work out every day and all that stuff. Most people say when I'm your age, I'd sure like to look like you. I'll take that for what you will. Murder investigator who I'm very close with comes up to me and says, boy, is that office, I guess I can't swear on your radio program, but it's screwed up, all right? And I said, it sure is. And then he looked at me and he said, you know, it's screwed up for the next 10 years, Ernie, because that's how long it's going to take to right the ship. And I got to thinking about that. And he's right. Because everybody with experience has been pushed out of that office. Some in the middle of murder trials that Paul took over and lost. Matter of fact, the jury came back, said he was the most inexperienced, unprepared, unprofessional lawyer they had ever seen. And that also made me want to run. I want us to take pride in our office. That pride that our office represents the people in a fair manner.
You've had some time in the DA's office, so you must have your own relationship with the police. How would you describe your relationship with the cops?
They've never seen anything like me because I don't walk the way they walk. I don't talk the way they talk. I only know how to do one thing. You know what that is, Larry? Win. If you look at my record, I've never lost a case here in Humboldt County. Most of the cases I got were last-minute handoffs. You know, I'd be walking down the hallway here, Ernie, we need someone to do this murder case, or we need some guy to keep this guy in. He's claiming he's sane now. So I did like maybe 17 trials by rough estimate. Never lost any. There were two that were hung. Interesting enough, one guy pled guilty to another case, and the case that hung was a half a bag of shake. I had just gotten here and didn't realize how silly that was. And then later, after the hung jury, Paul ended up dismissing it himself.
Part of, I mean, there are many aspects to the position of district attorney. Obviously, one aspect of it is getting in front of a judge and in front of juries and winning the cases. Another aspect of it is running the office, being an administrator. And that's an area in which the existing district attorney has been criticized. What do you think makes you better equipped than your opponents to run the office as an
right.
administrator?
Well, because nobody out there listening to the radio has ever been in a DA's office, and no one's ever opened up a DA's file, and most of them don't know the difference between a DA and a public defender, let me just straight out tell you that anybody claiming experience managing an electronics company or managing an army company, that is so far distant to what the job calls for. The job calls for somebody who's been in the trenches. I've done death penalty cases. I've done murder cases, rape, robbery. God gave me two gifts. One of them is to be a great trial attorney and to evaluate cases, and the other one I can't talk about on the radio, Larry. All right. So if you're going to be a great DA, what you have to do is be able to sit down. You have to be able to evaluate the cases. You don't file the ones you can't win, and you use the standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. Then you call your troops in. You give the very best people you can your cases that are of import. We'll call them cases of import, murder, rape, robbery, headlines, whatever. And they stay with that person. The way the cases are now in that office, they meander from office to office to office, more layers of dust. And then finally, it's the last guy who walks in and says, here, we need you to try the case. You have to be able to evaluate the case. In order to evaluate the case, you don't come into your own until you've been a DA for 15, 20 years. So anybody who's wearing this, the emperor has no clothing, say 4 or 5 years, saying that they can manage, they can't manage a DA's office because they've only been lawyers for 4 or 5 years, and they don't know what the case is worth. They wouldn't know how to evaluate it. They just kind of toss them aside without any guidance.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned in there sort of evaluating the cases as they come into the office and deciding which ones should be prosecuted and which ones shouldn't. And I want to play a piece of audio, and here's where the headphones will come in handy for you. This is from some remarks you made at the Mateel on Saturday. Los Marijuanos and Camel Cowboys were playing. It was an event that was trying to put some focus on sort of environmentally sound growing techniques. And this is something you said from the stage on Saturday.
To somewhere else.
I'll go ahead and start it at the beginning. That'll make it easier for all of us.
Because what I'm interested in is people who are violent, not the growers. In terms of priorities, my priorities will be to make sure our environment stays clean and that the growers get to live their own lives, because there's a lot of violence that I want to go after, rape, robbery, and murder. I don't care about the growers. So you can look me up. You'll know where I am. If my voice doesn't have the ring of truth, vote for someone else. Thank you for caring.
All right, there it is.
That guy sounds smart. Okay, Larry, what can I do?
That's a declarative statement there from the stage of the Mateel. Now, that sounds to me unambiguously, you saying, look, if I'm the district attorney, I am not there to prosecute people for growing weed. I'm worried about violent crime, and I'm worried about some other things.
Here's the keynote to that: responsibility. If you're going to grow marijuana in Humboldt County, do it responsible. Don't poison our fauna, and don't poison our animal life. Don't divert the water streams. Don't have diesel fuel going into our water wells. Do whatever you're going to do. Here's what I was telling those folks, that if they violate the environmental laws, then that will be one of my platforms. I want to restore our environment. If somebody is caught growing and they are being prosecuted, like for 1,000 plants or more, 10,000 plants, say, then what we have to do is restore the land to what it was. to make it pristine rather than all the garbage they throw in with all the fertilizers they're using and the rat poisoning. The whole purpose of that meeting was, of course, to be responsible, to keep people from using rat poison, things of that nature. So, yeah, I really don't care about growing as such because it's a changing industry. It's adopting. It's evolving. And if you only have eight DAs and you have a bunch of murder cases, what are you going to do? Are you going to have to go after the murder case or some family that's growing small amounts for a living? The answer is obvious. You're going to go after the murder cases. You only have so many resources. That's my answer.
Okay. And in your mind, is that a policy different than what exists today in the DA's office?
Yes, and I'll tell you also, statewide and locally, that the policy when it comes to marijuana is schizophrenic. There's not one DA or one politician who's going to tell you what the law is next day, next week, next month, next year. I have to deal in a fact-based reality. If people are growing marijuana here and they've been growing them for years and years, that's what's going to be. With eight DAs and the limited resources, you're not going to eliminate it. And it happens to be pretty much a nonviolent crime. Let me tell you where the violence comes in, where you get the narco gangs from down across the border coming up here and uprooting our soil and walking around with machine guns. Those people aren't welcome here. And the other thing is when you come up from the Bay Area and they set up eyes and they pull out their AK-15s and they do these robberies, those people aren't welcome here. And what I did pledge to the growers is if they are caught growing because somebody has broken in their house, somebody has held a shotgun to their head and taken their livelihood, maybe even their safety, their person, whatever. The people who report it, I'm not going to prosecute them. All that does is promote crime. I'm going to go after the people who robbed them.
What is your opinion on whether or not marijuana should just be legalized?
Oh, God, the only saints I know are dead ones. My job as chief law enforcement officer of Humboldt County would be to enforce the law. But everything has to have priorities. The enforcement of marijuana laws is going to be at the very lowest level of my
regime.
Do you have a
belief sort of philosophically about whether or not...
It would be described as a libertarian belief. Everybody can do what they want to do if they're not harming other people.
So if you had your way, you were the president of the universe... It would not be illegal.
I'd say, hey, check out Colorado, check out Washington State. If you see a whole bunch of bank robberies with people that are stoned on grass, then you put an end to it. But if you don't, live and let live. That's kind of like how we have to do it.
Okay. All right. I want to talk a little bit about a document that's on your website. And remind me again the URL for your website.
Oh, thank you, Larry. It's VoteArnieKline.org, VoteArnieKline, KLEIN.org. I'm an open book, pretty much. You can go there and see whatever I stand for.
Okay, that's the website. And there is stuff there, including this document that lists five principles that I believe...
I call them 5 points of reason.
5 points of reason. And we talked a little bit about the first one, focus on violent crime. Another one of your principles is preserve our environment, provide veteran leadership, the cannabis issue, which I guess we probably just discussed, but I want to discuss a little bit more, and emphasis on public safety. So in the cannabis issue, a sub-bullet point is case-by-case basis with a heavy dose of compassion. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is what we went back before. Is there a crime committed? You have to be able to evaluate the crime. You have to determine whether you can prove the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, let's just talk about medical marijuana. What a lot of people don't know in Humboldt County, and what some police agencies don't honor, is it's legal to possess marijuana for medical reasons. And if people are in compliance with that section of the law, I'm not going to prosecute them. I'm just going to go after people who are violent, people who pose a danger to the people on the streets and in their homes. That makes sense to me, Larry.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about another point that's listed here, emphasis on public safety. And I want to frame this in the following way. There's a lot, I hear a lot of discussion from people, and there have been things in local press and on blogs. There is a perception And it may be genuine, it may be just a perception, but there is a perception that crime, particularly in Eureka, but in Humboldt County, is higher than it is in other areas. That we and it's increasing. That there's more and more sort of violent crime. There's more and more nuisance crime. And I'm wondering if you agree with that crime is increasing in our area. If you do, and then sort of third, more generally, how you feel about problem-oriented policing.
All right. Let me tell you, I'm sure you've heard the expression that figures lie and liars figure. So when it comes to stats, you can pull up anything you want to promote your position. So I wouldn't be sure, and I wouldn't bet my family's life, and I wouldn't bet my own life on whether there's more crime or less crime. But what I do know is people are afraid to walk out of their homes now. They are afraid because, one, they might be assaulted on the street, or two, someone's going to burglarize them. People are afraid they park their cars on the streets because they feel someone's going to break in and take their belongings. So I think there is a perception, and I kind of believe it to be true, that there is more crime now than ever before. But I'm sure you can show stats to show that's not true. So it's more a question of perception. By the way, you know what the most effective policing method there is? It's visibility. 95% of law intervention is when the cops are around with their marked patrol cars, people don't like to commit crimes when they see them around. I just thought I'd throw that in for you.
Well, I believe that, and I agree with that. I think it's a little bit outside of your realm as a DA. So what could you do, and what would you do if elected as DA to deal with the fact that people are afraid to go out of their houses at night?
Good, and it's kind of like legal triage. Triage, you know, you break them down into three groups: those who are going to survive, those who are going to die, and somewhere in between, right? And the ones that are going to die, you don't treat, and the ones that need the emergency operation or whatever, you give it to them, and the others can wait until they get the medication or the bandaging, because I was a medic in the Army, and I know kind of what like triage is. All right, here's what I would do to make people safer. First of all, I'd give them a sense of confidence. That office has no sense of confidence. All you have to do is open the paper now, and you'll see plea bargain after plea bargain after plea bargain. So if you take a person's life, to me, then you have to go to trial, and you have to either be sentenced to a life imprisonment or some very, very long period of incarceration. Otherwise, you're sending the wrong message to the community. By the way, part of law is based on setting up a standard. One is punishment, and two, you're setting up an example to other people that if they violate the law, what you'll do. And those are two very important principles in the law, and I believe in them.
But if you, to any significant extent, reduce the number of plea bargains that are that go through the process, wouldn't you soon exhaust the capacity of your staff?
No, not if you choose the cases that go. That's where wisdom comes in. That's where experience comes in. If you took every case to trial, hell, of course you would, Larry. By the way, you ever have any training in cross-examination? You're really good at this. But anyway, let me just say, that's what you have to do. You have to pick and choose, like in any battle, where you're going. So you don't plea bargain away the murders or the kidnapping or the sexual assaults. You bargain away petty theft, the cases like that. Also, you know what you do to make sure you only focus on the hardcore crimes? You don't file cases like drunk in public unless the board of supervisor gives you the money to increase your staff. So you don't try all those little petty things. You know, did you read in the paper the other day, I wrote a column on it, they spent $13,000 to prosecute a homeless person? How absurd. Now, wasn't it just the money? They took up a courtroom, they took up a jury. That's 12 people's lives that had to sit there where they could have been going on being husbands, fathers, wives, mothers, and workers. All of a sudden, they're stuck in this courtroom on jurors on a homeless person. To me, that's insanity. Then they say, well, he was proved guilty. Who cares? Yeah. Think of the money that you could use, $13,000, get another cop car, go around and prevent crime.
I did see that, and I agreed more or less with what you had come up with. Although there was a comment that said that the person had insisted on a jury trial.
Who cares? That's his right. But here's the thing. There were alternatives. There's homeless court.
Right, you could have
just arrested him, kept him for a night, and released him.
Right.
How much more do you need? It's a homeless person.
This is a question that they would tell you as a lawyer to never answer, because it's a question I don't know the answer to, and it's a pretty basic question. But as a DA, you have absolute authority to decide to prosecute or not to prosecute.
Absolutely.
And who's the oversight? Voters.
The only oversight is the voters. That's why this election is the most important election facing Humboldt County in the last 12 years. It's going to determine in which direction policing goes, prosecuting goes, the court goes. You put it right on the head, Larry. The only thing is you vote for somebody, you believe in them, you listen to their words. If you believe in what they say and you believe that the person saying it is being truthful and not just pandering to votes, you vote for that person. Then that person is the most powerful law enforcement officer in the county. He can reject any case or file any case. So you make the point, really a good one.
Okay. You partially answered what was going to be pretty much my final question, but I'll go ahead and ask it anyway. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Arnie Klein, who is a candidate for district attorney. The primary election is in June, and if one candidate gets 50% plus one vote, then they are the district attorney. Otherwise, it goes to a runoff, the top two in November. My final question was going to be a broad one, which is that if I'm, you know, why do I really care? Who's the DA? I'm living my life. I'm coming to work here. I'm doing my thing. I'm not a grower. I'm a pretty much of a law-abiding man. You know, why is this something that I should spend my time evaluating the candidates and worrying about who I'm going to vote for?
Sure. And it's a really good, insightful question, because most people would think, why would I care? It's two reasons why you would care. One is if... Well, actually, three. If you were the victim of a crime, you could be on your way to work. Just as you said, Larry, someone holds you up at gunpoint, and then they drive away, and maybe they shoot you in the leg just for fun. You would care what the policy of the DA's office was and who the DA was. That's one example. Now you're walking down the street, you're going to work again because you're a hardworking guy. The cops stop you, and they cross over the bounds, and they rough you up. It's the most important thing to you, whether the DA is going to file that case against you or whether the DA is going to evaluate that in a fair and impartial manner and bring some reasonability into the decision process. And the third reason you care is because it's your county, it's your loved ones. How it is run will impact your life directly.
Okay. All right, there's someone who's been calling in, and they've been letting it ring for a long time, so they may have a question. If you don't mind, I'm going to see if this person has a question, and if so, then, yeah, you'll want the headphones. So let me just see what this is. Hi, you've called Kaham. Is it okay if I put your voice on the air?
Yes, sir.
Do you have a question for Mr. Klein?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, hold on 1 second. He's going to put some headphones on, and you can talk directly to him, so go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Klein, this is a fellow county employee. I'd like to say just about 99% of what you said not only makes sense on your opinion, but it actually is true in the sense of what is actually happening in the county. One specific question I'd specifically like to ask you, what can you do about the problem that I've suddenly been aware of, have been drawn attention to and been involved in, when we have a judicial system, our Superior Court, having people, commissioners, have ongoing innuendo conference with police officers and allow them knowingly to lie on the stand and giving people no recourse in situations that are minor infractions. I know this sounds low priority in light of everything that's happening in the county, but to me, it begins with justice. If justice is being served, if justice is doing what justice should do, it creates an attitude, and this attitude is like a disease in Humboldt County. It has been for years.
All right. Thanks very much for your question, and we'll let Mr. Klein answer. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was a very incisive question, because here's what I believe. I believe law enforcement should be held to a higher standard, and I believe the judges should be held to a higher standard. So when you elect me as DA, my door is open. You come in, you knock on my door, and you tell me the problem, and I'll look into it. Because the last thing we want is for peace officers to be lying on the stand, or there to be collusion with the so-called impartial magistrates who hear the cases. So I'm 100% behind you, and if you'd like to talk about that further and get a longer explanation, I'll be at the Barfly tonight on a meet and greet between 7:30 and 8:30. I hope you come up and introduce yourself to me.
All right. Arnie Klein, thank you very much for coming by, and I want to remind everyone once again, you just heard it, but if you want to talk to Mr. Klein in person, you can do so. Go to the Barfly tonight at 7:30. He'll be there. And the website, if you want to find out more, is votearnieklein.com.
Well, I really appreciated the way you handled it, Larry, and I can assure you, Tuesday at 6 o'clock, I'll be listening to your cocktail hour. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you very much. And if you're listening and you are one of the other candidates, or you're associated with one of the other candidates, the equal time is available, so just get a hold of me, Larry at khum.com, and we will have you on the air as well. I take a break. It's 28 minutes after 5 o'clock, and you got it on KHUM. It's Radio Without the Rules. We will be right back.
The Eureka Symphony continues its 22nd season Friday, February 28th, and Saturday, March...